is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours, it will be ours. Oh, one day, when the war is won, we will be sure, we will be sure. Oh, glory, glory, glory. Oh, glory, glory.
Hands to the heavens, no man, no one. Formed against, yes, glory is destined. Everyday women and men become legends. Sins that go against our skin become blessings. The movement is a rhythm to us. Freedom is like religion to us. Justice is juxtaposition in us. Justice for all just ain't specific enough. One son died, his spirit is revisiting us. True and living, living in us. Resistance is
good morning. Welcome to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. You know the voice already. It's Levan Miller. It's Friday. Can you believe it? We made it. You know, I like the song. It's a Friday evening. Bam. So thank you so much for being with me. Thank you so much for having me with you. I don't know what you do at 11 o'clock, but whatever you're doing, at 11 o'clock on a Friday, hopefully it's not ducking work. And if it is ducking work, do it so circumspectly that it is not considered ducking work. It is considered auxiliary extension to the operational capacity of your organization. Yeah? Perfect. And so if you get caught, you could tell your boss that's what you was doing. How does that sound? I like the way it sounds. So many of you may not be aware, but March, believe it or not, is law enforcement / the defense force month, la da da da, however they fit it on the calendar. But I thought I wanted to do something that was interesting, right? Over the course of my own career that spanned 10 years, months, 18 days, and 6 hours, thanks to Michael's reading, I've met a lot of interesting people along the way. But outside of that, I've met some people that I didn't meet in my career. And then I met some people that kind of came when I was almost at the end of my career. And then I met some people all throughout that 10 years, 9 months, 18 days, and 6 hours. Thanks to Michael Tweed. Right? And so I've decided that for the month of March, every Friday and Wednesday, I'm going to talk to some of my old friends. I'm gonna see what they're about these days. Many of them have transitioned on outside beyond the gate. And you know what is curiously interesting to me is we see the price tag of the defense force and the armed forces in every government budget. We see the line item amount, and we always wonder, what do we get for that money? You know, outside of the guns and the boats and the bullets and the bulletproof vests and the body cams and the shot spotter technology, what else do we get? And so my hope is that over the course of this next few weeks, as I begin to talk to some of these people, as they begin to talk about their experience going through the organization and their experience post the organization and the contributions that they're making, hopefully I make a more tangible argument for why attrition in the military isn't a bad thing, why it is good for some of us to get in and do 35, but why it is equally as good for some of us to get in and do 10 years, 9 months, 18 days, and 6 hours. And how that translates into the society around us, how we take that training and that discipline and how we take, just the downright wherewithal that we've gained from our time in military life and how we now apply it to our everyday lives, right? Like you see some of us and we are now convenience store clerks and some of us are welders and some of us are pilots now and some of us are boat captains now and some of us are administrators now. And you never once stop to think to yourself that, you know, this guy that sits here and looks so meek was once a trained killer. You never stop to think about it. You know, this man that I'm now passing so casually is a man that has had under his charge on several instances the lives of men, the countless amounts of arms and ammunition, has seen the brunt of nature at her most furious state. You never stop to think about it. And you walk past them. Walking among us now, as I can think about it in my mind, are at least 5 green berets, British trained green berries, fellas that scale down the sides of mountain with arms and ammunition strapped to their back and about 100 pounds, right? But you never think about it. And so, throughout the course of this month, every Wednesday and every Friday, you know, I know people like Chicago Lang, they have financial series. It's so wonderful when I hear them do that. Well, I'm not a financial major. What I am is a soldier, and so I'm having a soldier series. How do you like that? I think it's a brilliant idea. If you don't think so, I think you should think what I think so that we all could be happy together. How does that sound? Love it. So this morning, my first guest, the first guy out of the gate, is a guy that I met. I'm trying to remember if it was went in or right after I went in, but I know that he left when I came. So it was maybe a handing of the baton. I don't know. I do know him as Captain Glenn Bain, but I think he left the Royal Bahamas Defense Force as a, what is it, senior lieutenant?
Lieutenant Commander.
Okay. And so I see he has quite a colorful resume, which means he's been doing all sorts of things over the last 10 or 15 years that he's been out. And so I want to talk to him. Captain Bain, good morning.
Good morning, Levin. Thank you very much for having me here.
It's good to see you. You all have to tell me, how is it that you all age kind of backwards once it's all done?
We're like teachers.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. We try to keep ourselves looking young.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, we believe we're young, but you know, I'm going to be 60 next year, so I'm not as young as
you. Look good for 60.
I appreciate you. For 60.
So tell me, right? You came. Which school did you go to?
Aaron Bailey. I'm a Pacer.
Oh Jesus, more of them.
Indeed.
Listen, anything except for SAC. We'll take it. Okay, good.
We used to pack SAC and send them back.
Oh yeah.
That's what we did at Aaron Bailey.
You see this? They pack SAC and send them back. I love it. So okay. You came out of high school, and you tell me of the story of being what they then called at that time, and we don't do much of it these days, a direct entry Dartmouth train officer.
Direct entry train. We never did any training in the Bahamas. I've never slept on the base in the training department.
Mm.
We spent one half a day on the base, and the following week.
How old were you?
18.
So as an 18-year-old boy.
Yeah.
You leave high school. I don't know what you were doing in high school, but you came out of high school, obviously smart enough to be considered direct entry material.
You needed 5-0 levels to see and above.
Okay.
You got Match and English included.
Got your 5-0 levels.
Yes, sir.
And now they call you and tell you, Pinland sending men to war. If you won't go, let's go.
Yeah. Well, what inspired me was the Flamingo incident.
Mm.
Yeah, that happened, of course, in May of 1980.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just coming out of school.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, you got to be crazy.
Mm.
You know, because the only thing I knew was I want to be a waiter.
Mm-hmm.
But after that incident, I said, man, look here. I never wanted to go to college or university or anything. Like, mm-hmm. I hated books. Right. So when this opportunity came up, there was a Commodore Swinley, who was the very first Commodore for the Defense Force. In 1977, he came to the assembly at Aaron Bailey, on assembly, and he said, we're looking for a few good men.
We're looking for men
who can qualify to be officers.
Mm-hmm.
We want to send you straight off to England. England was only a dream to me. Send you straight off to England, get you trained up as a naval officer, and be in the runnings to become the first Bayman Commodore. You know, they swing us with that thought. Because in my mind, I was going to be the first Bayman Commodore.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Not knowing that Leon Smith was already in line to be,
right.
You know, from being a senior police.
And he would have been much ahead of you.
Oh, he was a senior police. He came over at the rank of commander.
Okay.
Yeah, but I didn't know anything about that.
Right.
So I signed up. I was happy to go. And when I got to Dartmouth, I realized that it was not what I thought.
Wow. So what was it like? You're on the ground day one. You came from sunny tropical Bahamas with slippers. Which month did you train?
April.
Okay.
It was a very cold April when we got there. From the airport to the hotel, we almost frosted. I mean, I had a little plastic jacket that I thought was a good jacket.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The very next day, all of us went out shopping.
Okay.
Yeah, but they gave us enough money to do that.
Okay.
And we spent two days in London at the Ascot Hotel.
Okay.
Right across from the Paddington Railway.
Okay.
And that Sunday morning, we got on the railway. It was a 2.5-hour trip voyage to Dartmouth.
Mm-hmm.
We got there. They had transportation waiting. Took us to the parade ground. Everybody lined up. All the internationals, all the Brits, everybody lined up. And what they said to us was, look, you're now at Dartmouth.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome to Dartmouth. They call your name, put you in the groups. They had 5 divisions. I was in St. Vincent.
Mm-hmm.
Put you in your groups. Once you got in your group, they told you, okay. The leader of that group said, follow me, gents. And he's like, follow you? What about our luggage?
Yeah.
You had to grab whatever you had And you know, we traveled in those days with everything we thought we owned.
Right.
On a hill.
Okay.
So anytime you leave the parade ground, you're just going up and up and up. And, you know, it was a devastating experience.
Mm-hmm.
We had to learn how to slick our shoes. We had to learn how to keep our kit together, iron the clothes properly, fold them properly.
Yeah.
We had to learn how to drive boats. Your first term, you've got to be on the river every day. Now, the river in Dartmouth, it's cold.
Okay.
Your hands are frozen.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, there's no bathroom.
Okay.
So if you want to wee, you got to run all the way back up to the college to wee. Right? But they don't allow you to do that. So you had to do that every day.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're lucky enough, you make it without peeing up yourself. You know? But we had classes every day. And this is when you learn to become what they call, we did celestial navigation, coastal navigation, marine engineering, operations and warfare. It's anything to do with that warship you would do in your first term.
Mm-hmm.
And your second term, you actually go on the DTS, the Dartmouth training ship.
Okay.
That ship, well, when we went out, we went to the Mediterranean.
Okay.
So at this young age, 19, 18, 19, I'm seeing Egypt and Italy and France and Gibraltar. And, you know, we made a lot of stops all around Italy. So you're growing up because you're on the ship every day navigating that ship. Well, you're not navigating the ship. Mm-hmm. They have, in the classroom, they have navigation set up.
Right.
So they're watching you. At nights, you're doing celestial navigation where you got to take sights of the stars. And so the next day you wake up and, you know, it breaks you. But of course, as an officer, they call us OUTs, officers under training.
Okay.
As an officer, you got to clean the toilets. You're the lowest ranking person on the ship.
Mm-hmm.
So you learn all this stuff. You learn operations and warfare, going in the operations room. It's so much you learn in that 1 year and you come back all hot, good to go. Then you join the Defense Force.
Okay.
When you get here, you start to understand what the Defense Force is all about.
Mm.
You, of course, I started out as a navigating officer.
Mm-hmm.
And I started out under Jackson Ritchie.
Okay.
Who was probably the most, I mean, he's there for five years.
I've heard of him.
The amount of rest he made in the 5 years.
He's like a phantom.
He is.
Yeah.
He is. He was the first captain I had, was my XO. So he was a naval. Now he became XO. So I trained under Tellis and Jackson Ritchie.
Okay.
Right? And you learn how to approach Northwest Channel Light. Because if you don't know, you're going to go on the wrong side and run up the ground.
Yeah.
Right? So that perpetuated into me becoming an executive officer, then a CEO.
Mm-hmm.
And at the age of 22, I'm a commanding officer.
Okay.
Yeah? Mm-hmm. A vessel of...
Now, hold on now. You came back at 18, you're CEO at 22.
Yeah.
Lieutenant.
Junior lieutenant.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you have 18... crew, including your engineers, your cook, and all the rest of that, and your seamen.
Mm-hmm.
And you can be told to go anywhere at any time. You got to keep the ship safe.
Mm-hmm.
You got to keep the ship organized.
Mm-hmm.
You got to keep all your weapons secured because sometimes you're going in to run ashore. You got to make sure people doing the watch, making sure nobody take over the ship.
Right.
So you learn all these things. And at that age, I was just one of many because you had from the two first officers to be trained at Dartmouth was Brad Dorn, where Godfrey Rule, Anthony Allen, you know, just kept going.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like in the between 10 and 15.
Okay.
As far as going to Dartmouth.
How many people went with you?
It was five of us.
Okay. Yeah. You remember all the names?
Every single one.
Okay. Who were they?
Yeah. Well, Steve Russell, who's in charge of Naval.
He's
my squaddy.
Okay.
David Morley, he moved back to Elutra.
He used to be in charge of Mark. He's a Green Beret. Yeah.
Well, he's the first Green Beret we had in defense.
He's a Green Beret, yeah.
Yeah. It was him and what's his name? Anyway, I'll get back.
Isn't it Sean Simeon Gatton?
It was Molly and the runner used to run the quarry. Came out of
Craig Frazier.
Craig Frazier.
Yeah, you're right.
First two.
Yes.
Yeah. Simeon and them came later.
Mm-hmm.
But so Molly would have been my squaddy. Russell would have been my squaddy. Colin Thompson, who's now a lawyer, would have been our squaddy. And William Johnson.
I've never heard that name.
Yeah, they used to call him Whiskey Johnson.
Okay. I think I have heard that name, yeah.
Yeah, we were the five.
Okay.
And we had 10 people in Dartmouth at the same time, the only time that ever happened.
Mm-hmm.
The five before us, who was 3 months ahead of us, were Tellis Bellman, God bless his soul, he died.
Mm-hmm.
Kervin Brown, God bless his soul, he also died.
Mm-hmm.
And the other two would have been Clyde Sawyer, who's still there.
I think Clyde is...
He's just retired.
Very recently, so retired, I think he may still have uniform on.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So it would have been those five and it would have been us. And then Calvert Johnson would have been the fifth one with Tellis Bethel.
Okay.
They just called him Fingernails. He and I graduated from R&B together as well. So yeah, we had an awesome time. All the officers were young. The officers that were not young not in our group. Mm-hmm. They came over from the police force.
Okay.
They were Leon Smith, of course, Commander Amos Rowell.
Mm-hmm.
God bless his soul
mm-hmm.
as well.
Mm-hmm. That is the Flamingo CEO for those people that don't know.
That was the Flamingo CEO right. when the Flamingo got blown up.
Right.
Bachelet LaFleur, mm-hmm. God bless his soul.
Mm-hmm.
And
Is he MIA?
They said. But he went on a fishing boat.
Mm-hmm.
It overturned.
Mm-hmm.
And he wasn't a very strong swimmer, although he had a lot of time at sea.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I'm sure Batch died. Mm-hmm. You know, he and I were very close.
Okay.
His brothers, his family, we were very close.
Mm-hmm.
And the officers who knew him knew that he wouldn't be MIA because he was never scared of nobody.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Okay.
Nobody's going to go out and leave his family.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew that was only talk.
Okay. Okay.
Right? And the other, they would have been the navigators
mm-hmm.
to train the young Dartmouth-trained officers.
Okay.
And, of course, from the Dartmouth-trained officer lot, you would have had the first Commodore being Davy Rowell,
mm-hmm.
right, who's highly polished. Of course, it just followed from there. But that first four, what they call senior police that came over from the police marines,
mm-hmm.
they basically steered the force,
okay.
Until such time as we started.
So we got enough Dartmouth-trained officers. Now, someone here is asking me, what about the Flamingo incident inspired you? I mean, people had been killed. The ship had been lost. The entire thing was tragedy. What about that?
My mind was, we got to get Cuba back.
Mm.
All I was thinking is Cuba blow up our ship? We got to get them back. We need some fellas like me to go beat up Cuba.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know at the time we can beat nobody around us.
Correct.
Right? Mm-hmm. But in my mind, we got to get them back. Because the whole Bahamas was humbled by it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And
mm-hmm.
of course. So that's the reason why I was inspired. And that's the reason why my mom tried to discourage me from joining the Defense Force.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Okay, so you're back from Dartmouth. You've done NO, XO, CO, right? We're talking about 60-foot craft.
60-foot craft. My first command was the 29-footer, the Phoenix.
Okay.
Craft.
Mm-hmm.
I did that for about a year,
mm-hmm.
and then the Lutra, which is one of the first four patrol boats that the police marines had.
Mm-hmm.
That was my first command. It didn't sail much, but when we did sail, it all ship.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, I moved from Lutra to Inagua.
Okay.
The same Inagua that I learned on.
Okay.
The Inagua had captains. It was Jackson Ritchie. He was followed by Albert Ambrister,
mm-hmm.
who was his XO.
Mm-hmm.
And after Albert Ambrister left, Tellus became XO. And after Albert was captain, was Tellus, and then me. So all of us were officers on that ship.
Mm-hmm.
And it was almost the same crew. And I tell you, it was some healthy fellas. I mean, we had people like Michael Hudson was mm-hmm. the coxswain.
Mm-hmm.
We had Perry Roma, Paddy Cox.
Mm-hmm.
We had Nelson Ferguson.
Mm-hmm. I know Cardinal Cox.
Yeah, we had Killer Sands.
Oh yeah.
These we had some really rugged slave role part two.
That should have been a rough
yeah.
crew.
Oh no, hey, let me tell you, Jackson Ritchie, the type of captain he was,
mm-hmm.
he was very inspirational. Once we did the radar navigation. Now they don't do mm-hmm. radar navigation today.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why they need to. Because you're not going to know what's behind that rock unless you're looking at the radar. People use GPS is not going to tell you. They're going to tell you where you are.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not going to give you a real life what's going on the surface of the sea.
Okay.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So we went hunting. We usually patrol at nights and we use radar. And anything that blip pick up in a funny area,
mm-hmm.
you know, Jack would say, look, mothership,
mm-hmm.
action station.
Time to go.
Hey, that 60-footer came alive. Everybody start drawing weapons, checking weapons, getting the dory in the water, you know, because as far as we're concerned, that's a drug boat. And
it's
we
go
got
time.
It.
Yeah. Now you all would have been doing a lot of sailing during the time where the Bahamas was a massive transshipment point for like drugs and that sort of stuff. What was that like? You're a young boy, not too long out of high school, 5 years in now, maybe 6 years in?
Well, when I became a captain, I was only 3 years in.
Okay.
Yeah. And the thing is, you had almost anything could have been a drug boat.
Okay.
Right? Yachts, you kind of could tell before you went on board what to expect.
Mm-hmm.
But if you saw a old rusty freighter,
mm-hmm.
then you know you got a drug boat arrested. It was a lot of poaching as well. People coming in the yachts, going around and cleaning, you know. But as far as drugs is concerned, once you're moving at night and you see a boat moving at blackout,
mm-hmm.
because we always patrol blackout, we never kept any lights
mm-hmm.
on, you almost sure that's a drug boat.
Okay.
But Jackson Ritchie just seemed to have a feel. I tell you, Jackson Ritchie would have had, and I, you know, I could blow his whistle and tell him tired because I know the type of person he was and what he meant to the defense force. Almost every week you'll hear his name on the radio. HMBS now under the control of Lieutenant Jackson Ritchie made another arrest, and you can add up all the arrests made in the defense force, multiplied by two, and Jack would have more than them. I tell you,
yeah,
those are facts.
Yeah,
right.
Okay,
Bachelet LaFleur, another one who made plenty of rest, right? And then eventually the rest started to slow down because obviously the drug trade started to slow down. So it started to slow down, but the strategy that he used, it carried with me. I passed that on to people like Alvin, he served as my exo at some point, although he became commodore eventually. So you pass this on and you know that these people, they can use the radar to navigate. They know how it is to do an effective patrol. How it happens these days, I'm not sure. But you know, I hope that it's still going on that way. And yeah, back then it was a lot of excitement. We made mistakes like everybody else. We were young. I don't even think we realized the wrath of responsibility that was placed upon us at such a young age. It was like natural after a while. So when I came out of the Defense Force, I was seconded to the POR department as Deputy POR Director.
Right.
And there was a saying, you think this Defense Force? Oh, you all think this is the military? You know, because you only know when you tell people to do something, they
move.
Do it.
They
right?
move, yeah.
You're now in the POR department, people are set in their ways, and I was his deputy. We had to learn how to deal with this situation where people don't necessarily move when you tell them to move. Right?
Right.
And it humbled you.
Yeah.
And I'm sure when Butch Scovella came out and he went to the passport office, he found the same thing.
Yeah.
He and I talk about that.
Yeah.
Right? So you find that when you get out of that arena of the Defense Force,
It's
not the same.
Yeah.
And you have to make the adjustment to those people.
I remember serving under Mr. Scovella as a CDF, of course. When I joined, he was a lieutenant commander, but he had already been seconded. The myth that was Clifford Scovella, right? So my very first encounter with him is at Government House. I'm a Marine seaman, so fresh out of training. My contract is probably still wet. And he says, young man, do you know who I am? And I had never seen him, but I had heard people talk about him. And instantly I knew that this was the man, right? So he comes back as commander, and Commander Defense Force, that is. And I remember he always had a saying, I accept three excuses. If I call a meeting and you're not here, I'm going to accept hospitalization, incarceration, or death. Anything else, I'm licking you up. And I said to myself, that couldn't have been working for him out there in the public service.
No.
Yeah, no.
And he knows how to make, you can remember, Sko was a guy who played national softball. So he knew how to mix with people, right? So he had two different personalities. In Defense Force, when you see him in a softball arena, you wouldn't think that's the same person.
Yeah.
But he was, I would say that he was probably the most impacting training instructor because Entry 9 trained under him. And the Inago, when I came back, was full of Entry 9 people.
Okay.
Right? And all you hear is Scovella, Scovella, Scovella. Right? And then there was, of course, Michael Simmons, who was also very impacting.
Also
and,
known and as the Mad Dog.
The Mad Dog.
The Mad Dog.
You had Luke Bethel, who did his thing, who was always there in training. Yeah. So those were people. And you had people like, when I first went in, when I first came back from Dartmouth, one of the first persons I met was David Duncombe. He was Master at Arms. He left the police force. He came over. I think he was a corporal in the police force when he came over. But the air about this guy, I didn't even think he was supposed to salute me. Mind you, I'm an acting sub-lieutenant.
Right.
And he would salute me, and I would be scared.
Yeah.
Right? Because But eventually we became very close because he eventually became an officer. We started sailing together. We did a lot of things together. But David Duncombe, Cliff Scovella, you had people like Paul Miller. Oh, man, I saw this guy moving around the base. He's short. And I was like, what the hell is he? He's crazy. He's chasing people. And he's shouting and screaming and goddamn, you know.
Yeah.
So these were people that and they had a guy named Peterson James.
I heard about
Peterson James. Oh, man, that Peterson James.
There's a joke about Mr. James. They said when Mr. James was the master at arms, right, you know, going to Coral Harbor, if you stand on the roadside, someone will give you a ride. And they said people used to pass Peterson James because he was the master at arms. So the legend told is that Peterson James was riding with a Marine seaman one day, right? They headed to Coral Harbor Base and they got to the gate. It was 0841. Peterson James then jumps out of the car, takes the duty book and say, mark him late. Oh, yeah, and mark me late right after him.
Of course. Yeah, and that was him. And he'll take his punishment too.
And the fellas, and so the fellas say, you know, the master at arms, we come together. No, we late. And so nobody would ever stop to give Peter St. James a ride because he was just that by the book. Like, he would put his own self on punishment.
Peter St. James lived on what's the name of the road off Blue Road? St. Vincent Road,
mm-hmm.
right? That's where he lived. He walked to work.
Mm-hmm.
Then he started to ride to work. Mm-hmm. You know what he's riding? A one-wheel bike. And he learned, you see him walking, pushing the bike, then he's trying to ride for a land. Mm-hmm. And eventually this guy was able to ride that one-wheel bike from his house to the base.
Wow.
This is the type of character he was,
mm-hmm.
you know. But, you know, these guys, discipline was it, man. They had that force rolling.
Mm. So how much time did you do?
I did 13 years on the base
mm-hmm.
and 5 years at the port department.
Mm.
So...
So when you think about getting out, right, you know, I see one of the big talks now is attrition rate, et cetera, right? But I tell people, I don't know if attrition has recently become a difficulty because, I mean, I think the general concept of military life is you bring in young men, you train them beyond average training, you wring them out, you kill them with work, and then if they kind of want to fizzle off in 10 years, it's fine, you've gotten your money out of them. But now they could kind of take what's in their head and go apply it elsewhere. That is what I understood the concept of the military to be. But now we hear the talk of people needing to go to 60 and, you know, people needing to stay extra time and attrition affecting the forces, blah, 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 blah. I mean, as operational as you suggest that your time was, why 13 years?
Well, I was seconded to the port department first okay. as well. And of course... Once I was appointed to the port department, I became to know a different world.
Mm-hmm.
You see, on the Defense Force, you're told as an officer, you're now in charge of this ship.
Mm-hmm.
You drive it.
Mm-hmm.
You got to do everything you have to do,
mm-hmm.
right? And I found that when I got to the port department, I couldn't even drive a mailboat
mm-hmm.
legally to take passengers.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have a license.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't take any vessel from the Bahamas, whether it's 60-foot size or not,
mm-hmm.
into... anywhere else outside of the country.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have any license.
Mm-hmm.
So Defense Force people are told to do things. And they do things that licensed people do.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't need a license because they're the military.
Right.
So I realized I had to do some things. I had to get some license. And start having kids growing up, you know, more bills coming on you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I need to make more money.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided, look, I'm going into this world of non-government.
Mm-hmm.
Because they say, what, some 75-80% of the people don't work for government.
Right.
I say, if they could survive, I should be able to survive.
Correct.
Right?
I better train than them.
I decided to take the plunge. I went off, I got a loan for the bank, gone off to school in Fort Lauderdale, got all of my certification
mm-hmm.
up to 3,000 gross ton vessel I could take as a captain. Because mm-hmm. of my experience mm-hmm. in the Defense Force, it was kind of easy.
Mm-hmm.
It was like going to Dartmouth all over again because the stuff we covered at Dartmouth came up all over again.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I got a job offer shortly after I became qualified. And as deputy port controller, my salary is somewhere in the range of $32,000 back then. This mm-hmm. is in 96, 97,
mm-hmm.
right? And I was offered a job for $60,000 a year.
Okay.
To manage two container ships. This time Atlantis is being built.
Mm-hmm.
They had two, the Freeport Feeder and the Freeport Flyer
mm-hmm.
that really bought in most of the stuff. They had a big contract to bring in stuff for... the food stores for Atlantis and all the rest of that. So I was a ship manager
okay.
and a relief captain.
Mm-hmm.
Captain Black and Captain Bill Williams. Anybody
in the world can know those guys.
Yeah, but Captain yeah. Black was the captain of the flyer and,
yeah.
and Bill Williams is captain of the feeder.
Yeah.
And when Captain Black was to go off and do some training or take vacation, I would hold the ship for him okay. until he gets back. Yeah, you know, and that's what I did.
It's a really good guy. Years.
Very good guy.
Mm-hmm.
For 2 years. And then the BMA, the Bahamas Maritime Authority, they had a ship inspector, port seat inspector, you call him Leggett from England.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted him to be replaced.
Okay.
And they wanted to use a local Bahamian. So they interviewed a couple of us and then they told me they would take me.
Okay.
Of course, they wanted to drop my salary at $45,000. I said, that can't happen, man. Mm-hmm. I'm living the life here with mm-hmm. the 60, right?
yeah.
So they decided after about 6 months, okay, we'll match the 60. So I went in with the BMA and I did 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And following that 3 years, because, you know, working with the BMA, you get to know what IMO is all about.
Mm-hmm.
You get, well, I got that within Tamago Shipping as well, because mm-hmm. the ships we had to be surveyed, they had to be mm-hmm. certified, they had to be crewed. So I already knew some of the stuff. But when I went to the BMA, it took me to the next level as far as knowing how to. So I decided to form my own company after 3 years.
Okay.
And in 2004, when I formed the company, this is when the ISPS, the International Ship yeah. Port Security thing, mm-hmm. came around. And I really knew a lot about it because I attended a lot of workshops and all of it. So I became an expert in that area, and that's what I did for the past 18 years.
All right. I got some text messages here. It says, good morning. Are you able, during these March shows, we can hear from any of the survivors of the Cuban attack? Sure. I'm trying to get Captain Whitfield Neely. He is actually still in service, believe it or not. Good show. I really believe the government need to implement a mandatory enlistment for all young people coming out of high school. Thank you for asking, because every year while I'm crying through the documentary, I still want to get them back. Well, I guess. LaFleur, people say they heard that Mr. LaFleur was in Haiti. There's so many. It's one of those things that is just, yeah.
Those are the people who don't know LaFleur the way I knew him.
Yeah.
And the way many of us knew him.
Yeah.
LaFleur, I mean, I saw people in Cuba that I thought, that I know wasn't in Cuba, but mm-hmm. look exactly like them, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But LaFleur was a family man, mm-hmm. first and foremost.
Mm-hmm.
LaFleur was a brave person.
Mm-hmm.
Second, they said, oh, the DEA wanted him, and then mm-hmm. he ran, and he fired an escape. Bunch of nonsense.
Because yeah.
I mean,
not the guy you know.
But not the guy any of us know.
Right.
Right? It's just callous talk, and you know, to his family, it sounds so yeah, bad yeah. because they knew it wasn't the case.
Right.
We knew that. I mean, it really gets me upset when I hear that. But
yeah.
Yeah, people always try and find. I figure they don't think LaFleur could have died.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I say. They don't. He was a superman. He couldn't die.
Yeah. You yeah. know? No, I completely understand that. Somebody says to let you know that Davy Roll went to SAC, by the way.
Yeah, I know. That's why I'm saying we pack them and send them back.
Mr. Miller, I think the RBDF and the Bahamas could greatly benefit from a reserve program and an ROTC similar program like operates in the U.S. I actually am of the school of thought that. Much of the people that leave can actually create an academy. I don't know exactly how it'll be funded, but I think that would be a wonderful idea. This person here says, good morning, Mr. Miller. Awesome initiative to highlight former uniform officers. I am a retired RN, and I agree the public needs to get behind the scenes glimpse of public servants. What it's really like having to spend years in these uniforms doing stuff no one else in their right minds would. Love you. God bless. Let's take this call. Good morning, caller. You're on.
Well, Eddie, you know, it's along with you and your guest.
Raymond Darlin Ferguson, how are you?
Oh, thank God for what it is, man. It's right off.
All right.
What I want to ask your guest, right?
Mm-hmm.
What's the skill of being navigated by the star without, or stars without getting in problem?
Well, Raymond, I'll tell you, thanks for the question, Raymond. I'll tell you that celestial navigation comes into play when you're doing ocean voyages.
Mm-hmm.
In the Bahamas, we don't really do ocean voyages because sometimes it takes you up to you got to get up in the morning during civil twilight to shoot your star sights
mm-hmm.
just to get the first fix. Sometimes you use the sun to get the second fix. So sometimes it can take you up to 6 hours just to put on one fix.
Mm.
So that's really for ships that are going, say, from here to across to Europe,
mm-hmm.
and they just want to get one fix a day
mm-hmm.
because there's no danger nowhere. So we don't do celestial navigation in the Bahamas because it's not necessary.
Mm-hmm.
We are always inside a land, Bremen.
Okay. Somebody here says, yes, he is a pacer along with Herbert Bean and Marcus Evans.
Indeed.
Okay, so tell me, Cap, you find yourself in the Defense Force, 22 years old, you're carrying out your own command. Which other billets have you come across during your time in the force?
Well, I served as the transport officer.
Mm-hmm.
I was the base first lieutenant.
What is that for the people that do not know?
The base first lieutenant is the person who's responsible for writing up all the charges for people who fall out of line
mm-hmm.
and bringing them to the captain.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a court.
Right.
I would be like the prosecutor.
He's the prosecutor.
So the base first lieutenant is, you know, the one before me was James Wallace. They call him Little Caesar because
mm-hmm.
he didn't play around. Once you go there, you basically know you can spend time on the base. You
yeah.
know you can get some salary deduction.
Yeah.
I had a lot of friends in the Defense Force.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, sometimes they come to me, oh, you know, Lou, they trying to do this to me, or they trying to do that. They say, what did you do? I look at the report. I said, man, look, you can get 1 week on the base. You know, I ain't make no sense. I can tell you what you can get. Mm-hmm. I know what Captain Snell is going to give you. Mm-hmm. You can get your 1 week on the base. You can get pay deduction for 2 weeks. So accept that.
Yeah.
He was my boy. I only let you know,
yeah.
Right? And then they start calling me all kind of things after that. Man, you might as well don't go to Glenn, because you know what he could do.
Mm-hmm.
He could tell you what you can get. He can help you get out.
Yeah. And the first Lou, so the first Lou and the base executive officer, they kind of keep the men in line. That is their job.
The first Lou worked for the base executive officer. My base executive officer at the time was Roger Roach. Big Roach.
Okay.
I mean, he was the biggest person in the force. So ain't nobody can fool the Big Roger.
Right.
He was the BXO, or base executive officer, mm-hmm. and I got his support 1,000 times.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I dealt directly with Captain Snell as far as the charges is concerned.
Okay.
But and I had Peter St. James working under me.
As the master.
Peter St. James. And then he had a fellow Delman Roll and Jonathan Roll.
Yeah.
Everybody know them all over the base, because they always going to chase up people to come in and answer their charges.
Yeah. The myth told about Delman Roll is there was no way to duck him, because Delman Roll knew everybody's first name, middle name, last name, pay number, street address, and phone number out of his head.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Indeed.
So you couldn't get away from him.
You couldn't get away from him. You try your best anytime.
Yeah. They say sometimes you'd hear that you're being put on a charge, right? So you take 2 weeks off vacation or 2 weeks off sick leave, and you figure you get away. And when Delman Roll would see you walking past on Tuppence Lane, he would be able to say, Levin Miller, pay number 2696. So you knew he was looking for you.
And you knew you wasn't getting away.
Yeah, I hear that story.
And very good stuff. And that was first Lou, man. We put more money in the kitty, as they call it.
Yeah, and people don't get it, right? But believe it or not, like a lot of people say a lot of times, we wish there was some way to hold men in uniform accountable, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. If you all know the amount of licking up that goes down on that base, it is unbelievable. There's not 1 week that goes by, right? Because they put the names up of people that have been defaulted in the daily orders, which is printed every day. And so you know who's been before the BXO, mm-hmm. and exactly what punishment, because the force wants the entire force to know so that there's no getting away. And it can range anywhere from 5 days leave stoppage to about 21 days leave stoppage, sometimes forfeiture of pay, sometimes charges that range somewhere anywhere from about $200 to about $1,200, I've seen.
Yeah.
And so these are the things that people ask, what keep these men in line? What make them so disciplined? I'll tell you, you put your hand in their pocket and all of a sudden they'll start to behave. That's the way it works.
And then it starts from training too.
Yeah, and the training.
If you could take that training,
mm-hmm.
then you could take a lot after that,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, somebody here says Captain Neely is the newly appointed ambassador to Haiti. Yes, but he's still here. I just saw the skipper the other day. Good morning, Mr. Miller. I commend all of the officers of the RBDF, those original pioneers, Commodore Leon Smith, who brought the first women into the ranks, the Ragged Island boys, who were the first captains. God bless the RBDF. 323-623-2323-254-316-325-4259. I want to open the lines, Cap, so that we can take some calls from, I don't know, you may have some friends out there that are listening. So, base voice Lou, and then what?
Well, I went back to the 108s, the Port Nelson.
Those should have been new at the time.
Well, they were not new at that time.
Mm-hmm.
But what I would have done,
they came in 85.
Started with a P-boat, I went to Eleuthera.
Okay.
I was commanding officer of the Inagua, and then we went in 86 to do the workups for the 3 108s.
Mm-hmm.
So we did that. We came back ahead of the ships when they got in. I was XO to Roger Roll on the Port Nelson.
Okay.
Right? Shortly after that, Roger became BXO.
Okay.
They put me back on the Inagua. And I was on the Inagua for about a year. Mm-hmm. And then when James Wallace was leaving, because he took over the Yellow Elder from LaFleur.
Okay.
When he was leaving, I took over the Yellow Elder as commanding officer.
Mm-hmm.
And I met a gentleman on the Yellow Elder. First of all, my exo when I left the Inagua was Herbie Bain.
Okay.
Right? I always tell him I train him. He would have me thinking nobody train him.
I was about to say.
He was my best pupil, I'll say. Mm-hmm. And he was also my best friend.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So Herbie and I got along well. But when I went to the Yellow Elder to take over,
mm-hmm.
it was Orlando Forbes.
Okay.
Now, Orlando Forbes with Herbie being Squatty.
Okay.
It was three of them. Him, Claire, it was four of them.
Mm-hmm.
Went to Dartmouth together.
Okay.
And Orlando is now the port director for Freeport for the past, 10, 15 years.
Okay.
So he's the chief pilot.
Mm-hmm.
So him, Thurston, Charles Roll, you know, you got a good bunch of Defense Force guys. I mean, when you look around the maritime arena, there's a lot of Defense Force people that some people may not even know they wanted Defense Force.
Mm-hmm. The legend told about Herbie Bain was when Herbie Bain was the CO on, I think it was Inagua, they said Herbie Bain would bring the boat alongside, and he would bring the boat so close to the dock that he could jump off and tell them, say, y'all put the lines
start on. Start the boat up. Yeah, that's what I told him. He tell you. Yeah, he learned that.
They say Herbie never needed lines. Herbie bring the boat so close to the dock, he used to get
the
off.
Just sit there.
He jump off. Yeah, he jump off and say, y'all put the lines on it now. Yeah. 323-625-4316-325-4259. Someone here is asking, do you know Edward Thompson? Everyone knows Eddie Thompson.
Eddie, oh yes.
Everyone knows. Eddie Thompson is like pine salt. It's a household name.
Eddie Thompson and Ralph McKinney.
Yeah, everybody knows Eddie Thompson.
Those are household names.
Yeah.
And they did well for the Defense Force.
Someone here says, we should have a mandatory RBDF service for all citizens at graduation, 18, for at least 1 year. What do you think about that, Captain?
I you know, back then, Sir Lyndon wanted to start
the
some type
service.
Of national service.
Yeah.
I don't think it should be a mandatory thing. Let me tell you what I really think.
Mm-hmm.
I really think that government shouldn't hire anybody who didn't come through the police or defense force. I think the whole public service over the next 30 years should be fully either police or defense force trained, no matter what areas.
So you do your first three-year contract in the forces. And then you come out of that 3 year and you could move
the
into your 5 year.
The forces feed the public service. So those who are getting ready to retire, they're replaced by Defense Force and police persons going in.
Mm-hmm.
They could always bring in new recruits and train them up and keep that cycle going.
Mm-hmm. That definitely changes the discipline.
But it changes discipline in the country because the entire public service is now military trained, right? Or police trained, which I consider our training is very similar.
Yeah.
So you get a country of public service who are not going to tell you, hey, 5 o'clock, I'm off, right? Or you think it's the military?
Yeah.
You know, we will have a far efficient country.
Oral Wood used to tell us in training, the reason we are Marines is because when men are tired, Marines have just begun their work.
We're just getting set.
Yeah. When men are tired, Marines have just begun their work. And
indeed.
And on the discipline side, there was a chief I worked for. I can't remember who it was. But I remember he always said, if you come to my parade late, we can send your body to your ma, your soul to God, but you belong to me. And literally, like, people would slip down. I'm talking grown men, you know, would be slipping down trying to make sure that they got on parade in time. Because if you here late, he said, I would rather you be dead. Let them call me and tell me you die. I would prefer to deal with that. Do not come here late. Because if you late, I'm going to send your body to your ma, your soul to God.
And it's statements like that resonated
and
caused people to do better.
Yeah. You know? And you literally lived, like, I don't want to say in fear, but... It's like there are men that have come to the organization that have been so commanding. When I joined, Edon Green was the master at arms.
Oh yeah.
I tell people I
Big
was
Green was
I was terrified of Edon Green. Terrified. I was and he had this voice, my son.
Yeah.
And he wore these very big owl like glasses. And you know, he was a big man.
And big and strong.
Yes.
And he'd tell you what he told his sons.
Yeah.
He said, look here, you don't even have to give me no notice. You could sneak me anytime you want. And I'll have you on the ground. Say, if I sleep and sneak on me, whatever. Y'all take your jump.
He was a big
guy.
He was
a character, and he was one of the Defense Force builders, one of many.
Yeah.
And it was so many Defense Force builders that came from that first and second entry, and the ones that came over from the police force to start up from police marines, those guys really built the Defense Force.
Who are some of the guys that you see out on the outside now that you know, you say to yourself or smile to yourself and say, boy, you know something, we've really built a good bunch of fellas.
Yeah, we got a litany of some of the, well, of course, Darren Hanfield is the minister of, he's
my first commanding officer.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, Darren and I sailed together for a while.
And I tell people, Darren Hanfield is a chainsaw, you hear me?
Oh, yeah.
I remember one time Darren Hanfield says, I am a lieutenant in the Royal Bahamas Defense Force. Anywhere in the Commonwealth I am a lieutenant in the Royal Bahamas Defense Force. We went somewhere and someone refused to open a gate or something to that effect. And we had come because there were some migrants that had ran aground or landed somewhere in the eastern portion of New Providence. And some security decided they would challenge Lieutenant Enfield. And he wasn't having it, right?
Yeah. Well, back then, I mean, how we came up in the force,
yeah,
we don't back down.
Yeah, he wasn't having it.
You don't know what you're going to meet when you're on the sea.
No,
you can't be backing down, right?
No, I always felt very comfortable, very comfortable working under Lieutenant Enfield.
Yeah, he's one of many.
Yeah.
We have, you know, P.I. Smith, Prescott Smith, the mm-hmm. environmentalist.
Mm-hmm.
He was an able seaman mm-hmm. when he left the Defense mm-hmm. Force. Mm-hmm. Very good worker.
Yeah.
We have people like Godfrey Roll and Scavello.
Yeah.
Waltz ambassadors to Haiti. And,
right.
And well, of course, Davy Roll would have been in charge of the BMA.
Mm-hmm.
We have a doctor by the name of Bert Williams.
Mm-hmm.
This guy trained with Davy Roll. He was mm-hmm. they were two squaddies.
Mm-hmm.
He's a doctor in Maryland right now.
Okay.
Right? And he's a surgeon.
Okay.
He's about the only person that I know from the ranks that actually went into the medical field.
Mm-hmm.
But again, he left the force at a young age. Jackson Ritchie, again, he would have been one of the biggest pioneers in, as far as ship agencies are concerned.
Right. This is the same Jackson Ritchie that contested in the election?
Yeah. Eventually, he ran on the PLP ticket.
Right.
But before that, he lived in Freeport for many years.
Okay.
And he formed this company called Tanja.
Okay.
It was, you know, his wife was named Tanya and he named Jack. So okay. It was Tanja.
Ah, okay.
That was the name of the company. Eventually, he was able to buy out, he started Global Trucking.
Mm-hmm.
He bought them out and United Shipping. He mm-hmm. bought that out. So he formed what you call Global United or whatever the company mm-hmm. name.
Okay.
That's another big company. But yeah, he would have done a lot of things. If you go down Carmichael Road and just past Prince Will on Blue Hill Road,
mm-hmm.
right? You see the Pat store?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's one of the defense. Well, he served as able seaman with me. He runs that. You have a couple of electronic stores on Carmichael Road. I don't know the names of the stores.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I go on in them and I find out who owns
them. The biggest yellow one is the ex-BDF, Herbert Marshall.
Yeah. It's just amazing what we do.
Yeah. Let's take this phone call, Gap. Good morning, caller. You're on. Up, they're gone. 323-625-4316-325-4259. Good morning, caller. You're on. Caller, you there?
Good morning, Levan. How are you doing?
I'm good.
I joined this conversation, of course. Good morning to your guests as well.
Good morning, sir.
Key point I think I want to mention here.
Mm-hmm.
The opportunities as far as the Royal Bahamas Defense Force is concerned, and also it could be maybe applied to the police force as well. If we look at the United States military, where they offer so many other spin-offs from enlisting into the service,
mm-hmm.
I think if those services or similar services are available through our armed forces or through our defense forces, perhaps they are not advertised as efficiently as they should. Because mm-hmm. I believe, as we see in this country today, Levan, that once you have served for someone, whether you work in the public sector or the private sector, once you have served your time and you retire, mm-hmm. unless you really have created a nest egg that you can fall on, there's still the opportunities that persons could use to skill the other disciplines
mm-hmm.
that they would have learned in the defense force, such as, let me give a prime example for the public. If I enlist as a Marine seaman,
mm-hmm.
but yet the defense force also allowed me to do studies into another area like the medical profession or something like that,
mm-hmm.
that is something that I can fall on after I've left the service.
Mm-hmm.
Is something similar to that offered in our services?
Yes, it is. Most of the people, particularly when you look around our sick bay area, I don't know if the sick bay was up and running when you...
Before I joined.
Yeah, so the EMTs and most mm-hmm. of those fellas actually have EMT training. What we do in the Defense Force is a lot of the things that we are certified in are parity courses. So, for instance, you have the SECW, which is the civilian standard training. The equivalent to that in the Defense Force would be the NILE rating course, is what they call it, the Navigational and Inflatable Life Saving Equipment course, right? It is the parity. Now, the regrettable part is the credentialing is slightly different. So when you come outside and you tell a ship captain, oh, I've done NILE rating, what the hell is that? Right, but it is the, as somebody that has done STCW and the NILE rating course, this is an identical course.
But you know, it's a shame though, Levan.
Mm-hmm.
Like I told you, when I came from Defense Force and went to the port,
mm-hmm.
I couldn't even drive a mailboat.
Right.
But I could drive a mailboat, but officially right. I didn't have any certification. The Defense Force, in my opinion,
mm-hmm.
should, anytime they make somebody the captain of a boat,
mm-hmm.
he should have his commercial captain license.
Commercial license.
And send him off to Fort Lauderdale. In Jamaica, they have people running their ships, are master mariners.
Right.
right? You know what it takes to become a master mariner? You got to be doing this for years,
right?
So Defense Force should, as they move along the rank with these officers and ratings,
get them the ratings, certification.
You got to do the able seaman course.
Yeah.
The problem in the Defense Force is why so many ships break down. Because if you look at the commercial maritime area,
mm-hmm.
you to be a chief engineer, you are officer on that ship.
Right.
We didn't have officers who were engineers.
Okay.
All the engineers were senior rates.
Okay.
And junior rates.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They never send them off for certification. They never had any officers serve on ships as engineers. They mm-hmm. had officers do engineering training and work on the base.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the reason why the fleet in tropical shipping, those ships don't break down. The
right.
Betty K, had they ever break? Because they are underclass, they have proper certification,
mm-hmm.
and if Defense Force persons was to go that route, if Defense Force was to give them the opportunity to sail on other ships and then come back mm-hmm. so that they could get their commercial certification,
mm-hmm.
when these guys reach 55 and they're ready to retire, everybody want them.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? And that's where we're falling short.
Let's take a call. Good morning, Callie, you're on. Callie, there? Callie, there? Not there. Somebody here says, good morning, Mr. Miller. Thanks for inviting Mr. B into your show. It's so refreshing to hear a product from the government school system achieve career objectives with discipline. We are so proud of the officers and Marines of RIBDF, especially Commander Raymond King. God bless you all for what you do, especially the Rangers program. Let's take the call. Good morning, call you on. Call you there.
Hey, Captain B, Lester Cox here, man. How you doing?
Hey, all Lester. All is on, my friend.
Man, I am enjoying this conversation with you and the host, man. I love the idea about people who come into the public service should either come through Defense Force or police or some kind of formal training.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's...
So I love that, man. You should follow up on that.
Yeah, I want you to help me push that, Lester. you got a lot of influence, man. You could help me push that. You know, I follow you all the time. So once you put it out there, man, we can make
that
happen.
We'll get behind it, yeah.
I leave on as a guy, man. Hey, but great conversation. I'm enjoying it.
Appreciate you, Lester.
Thank you, bro.
Okay.
All right. Like I got about a minute left. Herbie Bain, Dwight Boodle, Rosie Thompson, Delon Roll are all great men. The country would gain the most benefit if every citizen had military training and fitness habits of discipline. So it was good that Marvin Dean sat. What does this say? I can't read it. It's not in English. What about a gentleman by the name of Peterson? Yes, you mean Peterson James.
Yeah, Peterson James.
He's a living legend. Awesome show, Mr. Miller. Awesome show. Looking forward to more of these talks. Keep up the great work. Every Wednesday and Friday for the rest of this month. Levin, you even have a well-known chief, Emmanuel Gibson, worked as a cook on the Defense Force, an array of talent, Manuelos. Yes, I do know Manny. Levin, ask your guests, compared to other countries, for example, the U.S. Marines and SEAL Team, British Marines, Russia, China, even Jamaica, the RBDF seems soft and not prepared or ready for prime time. You should test them. You should test them. Excellent show, Levin. Cap, give me your last 30 seconds. I mean, what are you hoping for? How does your future prospects look? And what else can we expect from you?
Defense Force-wise or personal-wise?
Personally.
Yeah. Oh, I'm about to retire. I turn 60 next year. I've made a couple million dollars and I've invested a couple million. I don't need to work no more.
Okay.
I'm good.
Well, listen, if you ever want to, you know, adopt a child, you could always feel free to, because, you know, I always wanted a millionaire daddy, and I never
but
had that.
Levin, I didn't become a millionaire until I was, like, in my late 40s.
All right.
Right?
Okay.
So you got yours coming.
All right. Well, thank you very much for joining me, Captain Dan.
Thank
I'm
Levin
Miller. This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, your station for fresh news and smart talk. Don't move. News is next.